This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Less than 2 hours. That's how long 12 jurors needed to see through Colin Gray. 2 weeks of testimony, dozens of witnesses, his own family taking the stand against him. And when it came time to decide whether this man was guilty of murder, the jury didn't even need lunch. Guilty on all 29 counts, second-degree murder, involuntary manslaughter, cruelty to children, every single charge the state of Georgia threw at him, it stuck. Colin Gray is now the first parent in Georgia history convicted for a school shooting committed by his child. Only the third in American history, period. And unlike the crumblies up in Michigan last year who caught manslaughter, Georgia went bigger. And it got murder. Different charge. More severe. And here's the thing, when you look at what Colin Gray knew, what he ignored, what he told himself to sleep at night, the only surprise is that the jury took 2 hours instead of 20 minutes. Because Colin Gray had every warning a parent could possibly receive. The FBI showed up at his door. His son threatened to shoot up a school online. The kid sent him text saying, "The blood is on your hands." There was a shrine. A shrine to another school massacre. And a specific murderer on his bedroom wall. And Colin Gray's response to all of it, buy him an AR-15 for Christmas. Keep it on the boy's room. No safe, no lock. Hope for the best. How do you know to get up in the morning and feed yourself? Really? I mean, like, you think this is about that stuff, but it's amazing the oxygen that we share with some of these mutant-type people like Colin Gray, that they exist in our ether. But they're out there. They're out there. This is not an overwhelmed father. That's a man who decided looking away was easier than stepping up. And now 4 people are dead, and he's going to spend the rest of his useful life in prison because of it. Hopefully he meets a nice sharp broomstick while there. Maybe start a little love affair with it. A little toilet wine before letting the broomstick go all the way. Let's talk about the excuses, because Colin Gray had a lot of them, and watching them collapse under cross-examination was something to behold. The defense wanted you to see a struggling single dad, a guy holding a broken family together while his wife battled substance abuse, a man doing his best under impossible circumstances. And look, I'm not here to say raising 3 kids alone is easy. It is not. But overwhelm doesn't explain what Colin Gray did. The evidence tells a different story, not a father crushed by circumstances, but a father who repeatedly chose convenience over his child's safety, who saw the signs and decided, there's someone else's problem. By May of 23, the FBI and local law enforcement show up at Colin Gray's house. They've received a tip about online threats. Someone using an account traced to that house threatened to shoot up a school, and the account belonged to Colt, his son, who was 13 at the time. Officers interviewed both father and son. Colin was asked directly about the guns in the house and whether his son had access to them. He said the weapons were secured. He said his son understood the seriousness of firearms. He told police if his son made those threats, the guns would go away. Well, 7 months later, Colin Gray bought Colt an AR-15 as a Christmas gift. As a carrot on a stick, as he called it in the trial. I want you to be good. I know you're writing about shooting up school and kids and all that stuff, but let me offer you an AR-15 for Christmas. What do you think? They'll be good. You be a good little boy. Dad'll get you a big old gun. That'd be good. All right, go say your prayers.
Oh.
No gun safe, no trigger lock. The rifle ended up in a 14-year-old's bedroom. And prosecutors showed evidence that Colin kept buying accessories, ammo, laser sights, tactical equipment, right up through June of 24, 3 months before his son carried that rifle into Appalachian High School and killed 4 people in 41 seconds. So when Colin Gray sat on that witness stand and cried about how he never saw it coming, how there's this whole other side of Colt he didn't know existed, the jury had already seen the receipts, literally. The man was buying gun accessories while his son was spiraling. But it gets worse, because there's more, because there always is with idiots like this. You're sitting there right now going, I'm going to sharpen that broomstick. Can I ship a broomstick to inmates at the institution where he's going? Can I send that as like a, hey, just in case you want to clean up the prison a little bit, got some dirt coming your way. But it gets worse because Colin didn't just ignore the FBI's warning. The FBI's coming here going, hey, by the way, your son's kind of, yeah. He ignored his own family, too. His estranged wife, Marcy, testified that she begged him to lock up the gun. She said she tried to physically take the rifle from Colt's room at one point and got knocked to the ground for it. She told the jury Colin didn't want to deal with their son's mental health problems. And it sure showed from what he spoke to on the stand that he hoped it would just go away. Because he is the IQ of, you know, a disabled toad. A mentally disabled toad. And the testimony about the shrine, that's where Colin's credibility completely died. Colt Gray had photos of Nicholas Cruz, the Parkland shooter, posted on his bedroom wall. Multiple family members saw it, and Marcy testified about it. The grandmother knew, Colin's own daughter Jenny knew, but when Colin took the stand, he claimed he thought those were photos of the guy from Green Day. So then the kid in the pictures had bad glasses, and he assumed it was some musician. The guy from Green Day. That was his explanation. Who needs their canteen filled over in this prison where he's going to? His wife said he knew exactly who Cruz was. His daughter said he asked her to lie about this specific detail before she talked to investigators. When your own family won't back up your story, when they're actively contradicting you under oath, the jury knows what that means. You're lying, and you're bad at it. Then there's the text. Weeks before the shooting, Colt sent his father a message. Whenever something happens, just know the blood is on your hands. Whenever something happens, just know the blood is on your hands. 14-year-old boy sends his father a message invoking blood and blame framed around whenever something happens. It's not ambiguous. It's not a normal teenage drama. That's a warning. Colin Gray's explanation, he thought Colt was talking about his mother. Some reference to custody issues and family dysfunction. Not a threat, just a kid being dramatic about his parents' separation. I'm not a psychologist, but I know when someone is working overtime to convince themselves that a red flag is actually a white one. Colin Gray took a message that could not have been clearer and twisted it into something harmless because the alternative meant doing something about it. And doing something for Colin, anything for Colin, is clearly too hard. Doing something meant admitting his son was dangerous, meant locking up the guns, meant getting actual help instead of Googling troubled teen programs near me and never making a single appointment. Because that's what the evidence showed. Colin searched for crisis counseling. He searched for anxiety treatment options near Winder, Georgia. He even searched for gun safes, but he never bought one, never took Colt to a facility, never followed through on any of it. According to his wife, there was a plan to take Colt to a crisis counselor the weekend before the shooting. Colin didn't go. His defense, he said he never agreed to that plan. He said he was going to handle it through the school the following week. I thought they had it handled. I think we all know a dolt very similar to Colin, or we've all had interactions with one where you just want to push them off a bridge. Or maybe that's just me. Because you just know anything a person like this touches is going to be chaos and is going to cause heartache and hell for anything they do around them. and they're going to continue to be utterly oblivious of it and be a victim about it for the rest of their existence on this planet. So it's like, oh, bridge. Bye. Colt was scheduled to start therapy on September 5th. The shooting happened on September 4th. And here's the morning of. This is where you really see who Colin Gray is. At 9:42 a.m., Colt texts his father, "I'm sorry, it's not your fault." At 10:03 a.m., another message, "No, I love you and Jenny and Coley. You're not to blame for any of it." Those are goodbye texts. There's a kid telling his father something terrible is about to happen. Colin responds, asks what's wrong, asks if Colt is okay, but he doesn't call the school. He doesn't leave work. He just sits there. The first shots are fired at 10:22 a.m. Colin Gray finally left his job at 11:18 a.m. after his wife had been urging him to go over for an hour after she told him the shooting was already on the news. And on his way home, sharpen that broomstick more after this line. You ready for it? On his way home, after he knows there's an active shooting, after his son's already warned him, he stops at Quick Trip to buy a drink for $1.79. Gotta get that big gulp. Oh, buddy, there's some big gulps coming for you in prison. Hope your throat's ready. Hope you like to gulp big. He didn't go to the school, didn't call the school, went home to check if the guns were still there. After he got the $1.79 big gulp at the Quick Trip. After he knew his son was actively shooting the school. Police arrived 5 minutes after he did. Body cam footage captured him saying, "God, I knew it." He knew it, his words. And somehow, in his mind, that wasn't going to be a problem. But the moment that reality broke this case open, the testimony that destroyed whatever sympathy Colin Gray might have scraped together came from his own daughter. Jenny Gray was 13 when her brother killed four people. She's now living with a foster family. Thank God. She uses a different last name. She's trying to build a life that isn't defined by these mutants that raised her. And she took the stand against her father. She told the jury that Colin asked her to cover for him before she was interviewed by investigators, that he specifically told her not to mention what he knew about the Cruz photos, that he wanted her to downplay his awareness of Colt's problems. Colin's response on the stand, he said he was shocked by her testimony, said he didn't know who that person was. His own daughter, a kid who had already lost everything, her brother, her family, her name, looked him in the eye from the witness stand and told the truth anyway. She had every reason to protect him. She didn't. Because she couldn't. Because she knows her father's a monster too. And when your child won't lie for you, the jury knows exactly who you are. Colin Gray is going to prison. The sentencing hasn't happened yet. Appeals are certain, but the conviction stands and the message it sends is unmistakable. The excuses don't work anymore. "I didn't know" doesn't work when the FBI told you directly. "You seem fine" doesn't work when there's a shrine to a mass shooter in his bedroom. "I was going to get him help" doesn't work when you never made the call, never showed up, never followed through. The crumbly set the precedent in Michigan. Colin Gray just raises stakes. What was manslaughter in Oxford became murder in Georgia, and every prosecutor in America watched this verdict come down. Here's a hard truth that no one is going to be saying out loud. Most of these shooters don't emerge from nowhere. They leak warning signs. They escalate. They tell people sometimes directly, and somewhere there's a parent who sees it, who knows something is wrong, and who decides that hoping for the best is easier than acting on the worst. Colin Gray made that choice. He saw the warnings. He heard the threats. He watched his son unravel, and he bought him an AR-15, left it in his room, and told himself everything would be fine. Two teachers are now dead. Richard Aspinwall and Christina Ermine, two 14-year-old students, are dead. Mason Schimmelhorn and Christian Aniglo. Nine more people were wounded. An entire community is shattered and traumatized, and a man who had every opportunity to stop it convinced himself that doing nothing was good enough. Jury needed less than 2 hours to decide that Colin's going to be behind bars for the rest of his life. And other things I was wanting to say there, but I'm like, yeah, let's not get too graphic. Because when you lay out all the warnings Colin Gray ignored, all the excuses he manufactured, all the chances he had to do something, anything, the only question left is how he ever thought he'd walk away from this. He didn't. The next parent who thinks they can arm a troubled kid and look the other way, well, watch what happens. The rules changed. The accountability is real. And I didn't know. It's never going to save you either. Your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube and our Substack. The links are in the description. Love to get your feedback on this. We'll continue our conversation right there. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts as well, so you don't miss any of our coverage of this or the many cases we're following for you right here. All right, we'll continue the conversation in the comments. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.